Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor of Foresight Health. It is Friday, March 12th. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about the healthcare provisions in the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. Perhaps you heard about it this week. We're going to break today's conversation down into two parts: the provisions that affect the Affordable Care Act and the healthcare provisions that affect everything else. To explain it all to us on today's show are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
Well, today would have been my late mother's 89th birthday. Barbara Johnson was an ESL teacher, intellectually curious, lifelong Democrat, and an avid reader. After she retired, my brother Doug and I like to joke that Mom was either at the library or thinking about going to the library. It's actually where we scattered her ashes. So one quick story. During the 96 presidential campaign, she got in line to shake Bill Clinton's hands outside by the tennis courts at our high school. As she often did, she was wearing a Navy sweatshirt with a picture on the front of a pile of books and the caption, "So many books, so little time." Bill Clinton looked into her eyes, shook her hand, and said how much he liked her sweatshirts. And Mom basically melted at the compliment. And for weeks afterwards, she just wouldn't shut up about how handsome Clinton was, those piercing blue eyes, how much he loved books, how much they had in common. So there you go. Happy birthday, Mom.
Great story, Dave. Thank you. Julie, how about you? How are you doing this morning?
My week was definitely made by the hearing that I might actually get a vaccine by May 1st. I think Biden is on a tear. And I was literally sitting struck last night by the fact that we really have national action right now. And it's amazing. It's like whiplash. So it feels really good.
No, that's great. Yeah, I think millions of people share your feelings. All right. Now, before we talk about the American Rescue Plan and how it will affect healthcare, let's talk briefly about other provisions in the law that caught your eye. Dave, are there any non-healthcare items in the law that made you shake your head, either in agreement or disagreement or disgust?
Well, I really like the anti-poverty provisions. We're at Gilded Age levels of income inequality. And this is the first move in almost 50, 60 years to really try to address that. So I really like that. The one item I'm still processing is the $86 billion bailout for multi-employer pension plans. There's 126 of them that cover about 1 million people, and that they're going to pay out full benefits over 30 years with no strings attached. Trying to figure out what that has to do with the American Rescue. But anyway, I'm still processing that one.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how about you? Are you still processing any non-healthcare items in the law that caught your eye?
Absolutely, Dave. You know, I was thrilled to see $130 billion go to help schools reopen, reducing class sizes, addressing remote learning needs, a lot in there. But then I started to do some math, which can be a little bit dangerous. And when I tried to compare that $130 billion to the $8 billion that airports got, it's just over 16 times. And it sort of seems to me like airports made out like bandits. There's certainly a lot more schools to open out there than airports in general. So, you know, the math doesn't always make sense to me.
Interesting. I read that the law would make any student loan forgiveness in the future tax-free and not taxable income. So that provision is going to go over really well in my household if that happens. So hear, hear.
Hallelujah.
All right, let's dig into the new law's healthcare provisions. Dave, tell us what the new law does to or for the ACA and whether what it does is a good thing or bad thing for people who need health insurance.
Well, it's definitely a good thing for Americans who can't afford health insurance, as well as potentially for Medicaid enrollees in states that haven't expanded Medicaid. Provisions in the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, represent the biggest changes to the ACA since its passage in 2010. at a cost of $35 billion. The biggest item is the substantial increase in subsidies for individuals and families buying health insurance plans on the public exchanges. Importantly, ARPA eliminates income caps, so all Americans are now eligible for subsidies. ARPA replaces those caps with a formula that requires participants to pay 8.5% of their income for health insurance based on the cost of the second lowest priced silver plan. The size of the monthly benefit depends on location, plan cost, age, and income. Older individuals will experience greater monthly savings because their plan costs are higher. ARPA also creates zero premium plans for those with incomes up to 250% of the federal poverty level and for those receiving unemployment insurance. Big picture, ARPA lowers premiums, sometimes substantially, for the 14 million people currently with ACA compliant health plans. The Congressional Budget Office anticipates that the subsidies will attract an additional 1.7 million enrollees. In essence, ARPA creates universal eligibility for subsidized health insurance plans. That's a great thing. The other big ACA item in ARPA is increased Medicaid funding for the 12 states that haven't yet expanded Medicaid. They include Florida, Texas, and Wisconsin. ARPA grants more funding to these states for their current Medicaid enrollees. It doesn't require expanded Medicaid eligibility. And just like the ACA now, the states don't have to take the funding, so it's not clear how many of the 12 states will accept the government's offer, given the continued Republican opposition to the ACA. ARPA's subsidy and Medicaid provisions expire in 2 years. This sets up yet another major healthcare brouhaha, this time for the 2022 elections regarding whether or not to extend these benefits. Bottom line, significantly more ACA funding for 2 years, and then the gloves come off again.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, what's your take on the ACA provisions in the law, and how do you think they will impact payers and providers?
You know, it's no secret, I don't think, that health plans will definitely see this as a more direct boon than health systems. But both are really come out to support the bill. You know, health plans will certainly benefit from the estimated $35 billion more in the income subsidies for the next 2 years as people buy insurance from the ACA plans. And honestly, large insurers are already starting to get back into the marketplace gain. They see the growing market. And enough remedies have been put in place that they feel like they know how to get in and price appropriately. You know, United Healthcare sold plans this year in 2021. Cigna says it plans to double its geographic coverage in the individual market from 20 to 40% by 2025. And Aetna announced last month that it's reentering. So they're all getting back in the game. You know, health plans, I think, like this, obviously reducing premiums for low and middle income families also increases the chance that the insured market will grow. So this is net positive all around for plans and providers. And, you know, Dave already talked about Medicaid expansion. And Dave, as we've talked about before, it's amazing some of the really big states that are not in the Medicaid game. You know, for health systems, this is a great thing if we can see a little bit more expansion in these states, because it really gives them the ability to provide care throughout their communities in the way that they want to in more comprehensive ways. And that's always going to be good for some of the states where revenue has been low for these health systems. I just don't know if from a political perspective, this money is going to be enough to really push the politics in that state over the line for Medicaid. And last, I'll just mention something that I personally love about this, which is it's letting states provide women with a year of continuous coverage in Medicaid and the CHIP program after they give birth. So that's not necessarily a payer provider comment as much as I think there's some things in this bill that are really doing some good from a very logical perspective.
Excellent analysis. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
Well, Julie, I really like your comment on the expansion of maternal benefits after birth for a year. You know, over half the births in the country are now Medicaid births, and we owe it to those individuals, the children, the mothers, as well as society overall, to really bring people into the world in the best way. So those are really terrific policy choices. I also believe, like you said, that the exchanges are becoming more robust. That will increase competition, lower prices, so that's a good thing. this isn't revolutionary. It basically keeps the status quo delivery models in place, increases access to health insurance, but doesn't address costs. So this will make healthcare more affordable for individual Americans, which is a great thing, but also more expensive for society overall. Longer term, this approach is financially unsustainable and ultimately self-defeating. So you've heard me say this before, I'll say it again, there won't be meaningful reform in the way we deliver healthcare until we change the way we pay for healthcare.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about other healthcare provisions in the law. Julie, what other parts target healthcare and why should patients care about those parts?
Well, first and foremost, if you are in a job that is unstable, you have been laid off, this is a hallelujah day in the sense that the COBRA subsidies are incredible in this relief package. The relief package covers 100% of the COBRA premiums for workers who are laid off through September 30th for up to 6 months. That's 100%. Federal government's picking that up. And this is a really short-term approach, but I look at this as we are buying American peace of mind. With this, we're buying improved mental health throughout communities that have been devastated economically. So, you know, they talk about this as being a more holistic bill. And I think it is in the sense that it goes a long way for people worried about their stability. And I'll just double down on what Dave just said about the fact that we now have the federal government paying for healthcare premiums, for premiums that many think are way too expensive. So health plans are making out. Taxpayers are not, but we as individuals in need are certainly happy about this. You know, second, the vaccine distribution and testing, the feds are making tens of billions of dollars available to distribute and administer vaccines, increase coronavirus testing, and some contract tracing activities with a special focus on the underserved and hard-to-reach communities. So this should absolutely accelerate our ability to get out of this nightmare and get back to some sort of life that starts to fill our souls. And furthermore, the bill is starting to really fund research like genomic sequencing, which I like to also think of as buying American kind of a medication for their anxiety. We've all dealt with so much unknown about COVID. We have had to change course and be on a roller coaster throughout this entire last year. And seeing that we're funding a little bit of research made me feel like we're hopefully going to have more information about this virus, which should start to relieve our COVID anxiety.
All good points. Thanks, Julie. Dave, what non-ACA healthcare provisions in the law caught your attention, and why should payers and providers care?
Just on a couple of Julie's comments, I've always thought, like you, Julie, that COBRA was cruel, that where you ask people, sure, you can buy your old health insurance heavily subsidized, but you have to come out of pocket for it right at the time you've lost work. So really good that the government is coming in to provide health care without that added financial burden. There was also some money for rural hospitals, which have been struggling, and for increased Medicaid funding for home and community-based care. Again, part of this more holistic approach that Julie was talking about. So he put all that together, and we're starting to move toward a system that looks at the whole person and isn't quite so fragmented and individual transaction specific. But you know what I want to come back to in terms of the non-ACA provisions, Dave, is all of the investment in addressing poverty. Estimates are that over half of the children that are currently in poverty will no longer be in poverty after these tax credits go through and other provisions. And people at those lowest income levels are under such financial stress, they typically don't have the bandwidth to think beyond tomorrow. And to the extent that we can provide some breathing room for people to think more proactively about their futures, to get their kids educated, to participate in community activities, we're starting to create the fabric of communities that's been deteriorating for really the last 50 or 60 years. And I'm kind of like Julie, I'm feeling optimistic. It's been a long time since we thought our government could really do something special. If the Biden administration is able to continue the progress against COVID, and we as a people collectively accomplish the goal of herd immunity, I think that actually changes the political dynamic. I mean, we'll see. We also landed the Mars rover with these incredible pictures coming back. So government is a positive force in the lives of people instead of the source of all evil.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, not living hand to mouth is certainly a good thing for a lot of people. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
You know, two things. I'll just say provider groups are not thrilled with the amount of money they received. So I don't think we've seen the end of some pretty hardcore lobbying on their part to get more money for the provider relief fund. Obviously, rural hospitals probably are the most in need, but we've spent a lot of money in the last year as a country. And, you know, I think we're not done. And second, you know, they're talking about some of these provisions, like the tax credits, moving into a more permanent stance, and Democrats pushing really hard for that. So I think it will be interesting to see what of these pieces, particularly of this relief bill, become permanent, because I do think this is a mark in time when we're starting to look at society in a very different way and look at the holistic needs of where economy and health meet.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm curious to see if this term ARPA catches on, Dave. Let's talk about next week, as we always do on the roundup. Julie, what are some potential big healthcare headlines next week?
Well, I'm just going to double click on my last week's comment around the infrastructure bill, which I hope we start to see coming, and just say that I'm hearing more and more about how we're looking at addressing more underserved and community needs in health. You're going to see more focus on virtual care and some of the regulations that are needed to really ensure that people get access in places where they need it most. So I think that that next infrastructure bill will start to raise a lot more of the needs of all people. So that married with this holistic piece here could be very interesting.
Great. Dave, what's topping the healthcare news next week?
Well, I got my first shot this week at the United Center.
What?
Yeah, I did at the United Center in Chicago, and administered by an Army medic in the 101st Airborne Division, who's done a couple of tours in Iraq, and had a very soft touch. And I got to say, watching the Army kind of push these thousands of people through one of these federal sites was really, really impressive. And I've already got my appointment, you know, 3 weeks to the minute for my second Pfizer shot. So I think we're going to start hearing a lot more talk about when and how to roll back public health safety measures in ways that are responsible, not impolitic. And I think that'll be a good thing. People have a little bit of a lighter step. Maybe it's because spring is here. Who knows?
Well, I definitely have vaccine envy now.
So do I.
Yeah. All right. Great discussion. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.